You have put a new song in my mouth. A song of praise. A sound that resonates, that all of heaven and earth may worship you. We tread the hills to meet with you, to see your majesty in all that surrounds us. For it speaks and displays the eternal God of ages, creator, author, victor. In love, you established an everlasting covenant with your people, and it's your love that captivates us. As children of the King, we rush in as waves unrestrained. Overcome, overwhelmed, that the King crowned in glory and splendor would reach down to place a crown upon our heads. So we raise our banner, the banner we boldly stand under, the banner of Jesus Christ. From dusk to dawn, from age to age, your praise resounds in all the earth. Deliverer, Redeemer, ruler of an everlasting kingdom that cannot be shaken, we trust in the name of Christ Jesus, the only King, forever.
Welcome to Zion's Redemption Radio. This is Fundamentally Mormon. I'm your host, Mark Lichtenwalter. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. You can find this at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. And the text will also be posted on my Facebook wall at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. You can also find the text and the audio to this radio program on iTunes at Fundamentally Mormon and in the different Facebook groups that I am an admin of. Some of those groups are LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, Latter-day Unity, and others. You can find the pages that I admin also on my Facebook wall. And if you enjoy this program, please friend request me or follow me and make me one of your close friends. We try to put out as many episodes as we can during the week. But I'm thankful for you to be here today. Let's get right into the reading today. We are going to be reading out of Ogden Kraut's books. You can find his books for free to read online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. Today we are continuing on with Chapter 5 of The Coming American Revolution. We will be on pages 61 through 77, and I will get right into the reading. One thing, though, real quick, I'm not an admin of Latter-day Unity anymore. Rick Bennett posted some stuff about Denver Snuffer, and I replied with comments, which Rick did not like. He threatened to ban me and I'm an admin of that group, and you don't ban admins of groups, not ban me, but block me. I told him if he did so, I would ban him from the group. And I tried to call the lead administrator and talk to him about it, but he was not available. I talked to him for a little bit, but I never really got an answer from him. So I banned him, Rick Bennett, from the group, and then Tyler Hines decided to ban me from the group and block me without even talking to me. So childish behavior by both Rick Bennett and by Tyler Hines. If you post things in a group, expect discussion, and if you don't like the discussion and the person isn't calling you names, then, you know, like, I don't know. But whatever, so I'm no longer in that group, and I have been officially banned and blocked by both Tyler Hines and Rick Bennett, both of who I consider children. Anyway, we'll continue on with the Chapter 5 of Student Revolt. And I'm not going to go back. It was so hard for me to get that intro made. I just don't have time to deal with it. So yesterday, I got up at 6 a.m. I helped my wife and kids get ready for school. After they left, I did some things around the house that needed to be done. And then I did my radio program from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. It was like, I think it was 7:30 to 9:30. Anyway, I didn't get pulled out of the yard in my semi-truck until 10:30. And I drove until 12:30 in the morning, got home around 1, between 1 and 1:20, and did some things to wind down and took a shower and went to bed about 2 in the morning. So after my reading of this today, I will continue doing the 14-hour shifts that I've been doing. So if I am able to come on tomorrow, I will probably come on later in the afternoon. So I'll do the 14-hour shift, and then I will sleep until I wake up, and then I will do some stuff that I need to do, and then we'll read Chapter 6 tomorrow. But that's what I plan on doing anyway. And now, I don't think I'm going to get through this whole chapter, and since I don't like reading this, this is kind of an introduction to people so they can go and read it for themselves. I'm going to read as much as I can in 2 hours, and then I'm going to end the radio program with questions or comments on the open line of the phone line that we have for the radio show. But I'm going to post the link and the text to this on this. If you're watching live on Facebook, I'll post it there so that you can finish reading wherever I leave off, because I want to get through a chapter a day, but if I'm not able to because this particular chapter is so long, then I probably will just have to skip it. So I'll give it 2 hours and we'll see what happens. All right. Give me a child for 8 years and it will be a Bolshevik forever. Demoralize the youth of the land and the revolution is already won. Lenin. American universities, and you know, I knew this stuff even before I read this book because God revealed it to me back in the 80s. So, like, this is what's going on. Khrushchev actually said that we Americans are so gullible that we would not take communism outright, but that we would be given it in small pieces until we accepted it as a whole. And that's what has been going on. And they used the universities by putting communist moles in the universities that got tenure and over time spread the poison of communism throughout the university system in the United States of America. And that's why you're seeing so many socialists coming out of the universities these days. So American universities, instead of becoming institutions of higher learning, are fast becoming spawning grounds for sexual promiscuity, subversion, and treason. Unless discipline is restored and standards of decency and order are respected by the students, our colleges and our streets will become the centers for revolution. A social phenomenon is occurring within the youth of America, which is destroying their standards, their integrity, and their morality. When these are lost, we have lost the foundations of good citizens and a good government. Propaganda on paper, by voice, and inaction, and by the news the media, the fake news media, are in fact revolutionizing campuses. Anyway, slogans and clichés are molding the minds of our youth. Expressions such as make love, not war, have evolved into obscenity, pornography, and free love in sex clubs and sexual freedom groups. Four-letter vulgarities are becoming the conversational expressions of the universities. Veteran investigators in the underworld of the dope and vice have a difficult time holding on to their stomachs as well as their sanity when they are called on to duty among the operations of the new left. Behold, are beyond the depravities of the body, they bend the mind with a subversion of their family, their country, and all else that is sacred. This is a quote from the Congressional Record, March 24th, 1969, or on page 62 for those of you who are reading along. Some professors have helped in publicizing and promoting them. The heroes of these dramas are usually depicted as socialist revolutionaries. The villains are capitalist pigs, actors, sometimes naked or near naked, portraying characters in lustful, sadistic, brutish attitudes. The coupling of the propaganda, the political propaganda of blasphemous, sacrilegious, and vulgar sexual terms used in regards to religious themes and family relationships is a deadly weapon blatantly used to demoralize and destroy. Another part of the same weapon is sensitivity training, now being promoted on a massive scale in the United States of America, including on some campuses, notably the University of California. The training consists of creative physical awareness of other persons. It is highly related to such physical contacts as between mother and infant and sexual feelings between persons. The idea is to become so aware of the other person through touch and other forms of direct contact. Classes are often conducted in the nude. And that was the Congressional Record, March 24th, 1969. So this stuff has been going on for a long, long time. In 1965, the Senate Internal Subcommittee released a report which revealed the success of communists in infiltrating the student movements in Latin America. Senator Thomas Dodd, vice chairman of the subcommittee, said student riots throughout Bolivia contributed to the overthrow of the American-backed anti-communist government of Dr. Paz Estenssero. In 1958, communist-led students greeted Vice President Richard Nixon on his tour of South America and Venezuela, where he and his wife were spit on, pelted with garbage, and forced to take refuge in the American embassy, page 63. The ideas of the conquest of Cuba was first implanted into the mind of college students. See, college students are smart enough to learn things and dumb enough not to understand things. I'm sorry if you're a college student. I hope that you learn, and I hope that you have a better foundation than some of these people do. But these communists will often get into these places, yeah, and radicalize these students. And that's why you're seeing so much unrest in college, university campuses today. It's because they're being brainwashed in these massive centers of higher education. And it's sad because, like, in order to get a good education, you have to go to a university. But you, like, as a parent, you send your kids to the university hoping that they'll get a good education so that they can have good employment and make good choices and have families and home, or a family and a home and all those things. And you're sending your kids into the lion's den and hoping that they're not brainwashed by this political propaganda, this socialist communist propaganda. College campuses were particularly fertile soil. Fidel Castro's victory in Cuba in 1959 had shown what could be achieved by a small group of young, dedicated followers. Castro's deeds had stirred up the imagination of American students already touched with revolutionary fever. They were ripe for indoctrination by the communists, the pro-communists, and the liberal professors. There were plenty of these around ready to talk about the evils and injustices of imperialism, capitalism, and the American system, and the plight of oppressed people around the world. And you know what?
they're like moles. They were like moles. They would get into the university systems and they'd have all their stuff. And then if they saw the signs of anger or anything like that within the students, they would begin to spread their poison. And when they got tenure, they had, like, why is it that tenure guarantees you a job for life, no matter what you say? I don't understand what kind of foolishness this is in the university system. If you are subversive and you're spreading poison among the students, you don't have the right to have a job. Nobody has the right to have a job. You work because you are a benefit to the organization with which you work, not because you got tenure and then you got into this system. Anyway, backup was provided by outside by Communist Party functionaries, including Hall himself, making speaking tours of the campuses. We're on page 2718 of The Enzyme to the Nations, if you're reading along. And we're in volume 5 of Enzyme to the Nations, by the way. Other vehicles of indoctrination were open forums, rallies, and teach-ins. The teach-ins were a technique developed by the earlier Communist Front study groups to reach larger audiences. Dressed up to look like fair debate, the teach-in was, in fact, carefully planned, timed, and supervised by specially picketed discussion leaders to give the organizers the advantage over the invited opposing speaker. About the hall were hecklers armed with prepared questions and statements, versed in the art of stifling and the opposition of swaying an audience. It also was no longer necessary to confine activities to the old secret communist cells. Radical students and non-left radicals were enlisted to organize college chapters of now national organizations formed under various banners, the banners of civil rights, fair play for Cuba, and the war in Vietnam, stop the draft, our academic freedom, and everything from free speech to free sex. And quote, the Honorable John Rarick, Congressional Record, March 24th, 1969. Page 64. The communist conquest of China was accomplished by a five-step program. Sorry. I ate a little bit before I started today, but my eyes are like a little bit blurry, so it's kind of hard for me to read, and I don't know why. So, a little bit of milk on my mustache there. Which doesn't matter if you're listening on the radio program, but it does matter if you're watching me on the Facebook Live. So, anyway, page 64. The communist conquest of China was accomplished in a five-step program which had been successfully used in other nations. Number one, capturing the student mind. Number two, organizing youth into communist organizations. Number three, exploitation of groups to popularity and power. Number four, revolutionary conquest to obtain power. And number five, control of state and government. Part of the recent erosion of campus youth begins with sensitivity programs. This breakdown of integrity within individuals is being introduced with such names as Sinanam Game Clubs and Impersonal Relations and Human Potential workshops. Federal funds are being exploited for their promotion, and some states are bringing these classes into mandatory school programs. Subversion is cunning, and it is the misuse of truth and the twisting of facts that brings about the worst form of destruction. Lenin knew the advantages of thwarting the innocent into the pernicious activities of the communist conspiracy. The communist Georgi Dmitriev, who was an instructor at the Lenin School of Political Warfare, said, quote, and this was 1958, okay, quote, "Let our friends do the work. The sympathizer is generally worth more than a dozen militant communists. A university professor who, without being a party member, lends himself to the interest of the Soviet Union and is worth more than 100 men with party cards." That's what I've been saying all along. That was Congressional, United States Congressional Record, August 22nd, 1958. Student group movements became another effort by communists to draw college youth into red activities. Their strategy is to involve as many students as possible, page 65. To involve as many students as possible into demonstrations, which will eventually recruit them into the hardcore activities. One former member of the free speech movement described his activities, quote, let's see here. Okay. A bunch of comrade kids ran over to us and said, let's form a union front. It sounded great to us. We were suckers. The communists ran the whole show and we were window dressing to dignify their activities. When the administration used our participation to deny they were surrendering to communists, it's tough on the ego to admit, but the Reds, or the communists, really sucked us in. We were used, and we were used. That story is being repeated in nearly every university in the country, as Professor Hardin Jones of Berkeley University said, quote, "The University of California at Berkeley is annually turning out more genuine committed revolutionaries, or communists, that, let's just call them communists, because that's what they are. They want to window dress it with socialism. And socialism and communism are the same damn thing. They're the same thing. They reach the end goal. The end goal is the exact same. The University of Berkeley is annually turning out more genuine committed revolutionaries than previously produced by the Communist Party in the whole nation. I estimate we are turning out more communist revolutionaries than we are turning out engineers. They're going to have a terrible effect on the society. A lot of them are going into teaching because they want to brainwash the youth. And they've been doing this since the youth were like a long time. So youth in their 50s were being brainwashed in these programs. You know, youth in their 50s, well, they were once youth and they were once in these university programs and they were once brainwashed, and then they go throughout their life with these views because they were brainwashed by these Soviet socialist communists. They are enemies to the Republic and the United States of America. Kenneth Goff, who was once served as a leader in the Communist Party USA, wrote, quote, "The demoralizing of our youth has long been a dream of communist world conquerors. William Z. Foster, head of the Communist Party in America, stated, our teachers must write new school textbooks and rewrite history from a Marxist viewpoint. On our campuses," and see, when I went to university, like I've said before, like, I noticed that in my English classes and in other textbooks, that everything that had, like, traditional values always had negative connotations around it, and everything that had progressive, non-traditional views always had positive connotations around it. This is all part of the brainwashing of America. I believe that one of the reasons God had me go to the university and take courses in the university is so that I could understand these things better, and I do understand them. I do understand them. So, on our campuses, it drives me nuts because, like, we're supposed to come out of Babylon. We've been told that by the Father and the Son many times, and we don't do it. We contribute to Babylon by building up the systems of their Babylonian governments and allowing these things to happen. And then, like, we're taken over by these people and we're poisoned with their poison. And in the LDS church today, you see a lot of the socialism going around and nobody can say anything about it because it's not a sin. It is a sin. It's a sin of ignorance. It's a sin of allowing your morals to be skewed by your political leanings. And it's just sad. And you know what? Jesus Christ said that there would be pollution in his house. He'd have to set his house in order. You know, and the curses first come among the saints. He says that in the book of Peter, 1 Peter, I think it is. And he also says it in the Doctrine and Covenants. Continuing on with the quote, our campuses, we find that tremendous amounts of marijuana, which has been shipped in from the Communist Party Western Hemisphere headquarters in Mexico City, and other dupes which have come in from Communist China, are widely being distributed among our youth. There are many communist group activities holding forth the campuses across our land. A few of these have already been declared subversive by the Attorney General and the Committee on Un-American Activities. J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, said, through the ages, the greatest revolutionary force has been the youth of our land. Our enemies know this better than we. In referring to the communist fronts among youth, he said, they inflicted all the sinister purposes of the Communist Party in the United States of America. They employ the same techniques and have the same objectives, mainly the conversion of our haven of liberty and freedom to worship as we choose to a godless totalitarian state where the adversaries of democracy can do as they please. Their sinister motives and attacks should be proclaimed from every pulpit and headlined in every newspaper in the land. And what did they do? They actually created clergy response teams and made it illegal for you to talk about politics from the pulpit. I thought there was a separation of church and state. There is. But when you take the 501c3 status, they tell you what you can do and what you can't do. You don't have to take it, but they give it to you as a tax exemption. Now, if you can't make laws concerning religion, then how are you going to write a law that taxes a religion? You can't. So the fact that they put this 501c3 thing out there and say that if you do this, you can be exempt from taxes. Well, the law that taxes religion is illegal to begin with. And the founding fathers were very enlightened on why they allowed that to happen. It wasn't so Joel Osteen could have a $1 billion mansion. There are good reasons for not taxing your religions. Anyway, continuing on. So anyway, they put this 501c3 status thing out there and told them you're not allowed to talk about religion or politics. So instead of pounding the pulpit about the subversive communists and all the immoral things that they do, they're not allowed to anymore, and then these communists have nobody to fight against them, except for the conservative Republicans. But a lot of them are so squishy that they're actually communists, socialists, and they just put an R on their name so they can subvert, like Mitt Romney. He's not a conservative. That dude is a Democrat, and you're ignorant enough to elect him to be in the Senate. It's sad. Oh, he's a Mormon. Who cares if he's Mormon? God cares more about quality than he cares about your Mormonism. Continuing on with the quote, it is also true that there were at least 1,600 teachers being trained yearly in communist schools. Their schools are organized for preparing young men and women for the revolution. But knowing that one of the most fertile fields for activities is that of education, great stress is put on recruiting teachers into the communist schools where they are prepared in subtle indoctrination in the subtle indoctrination of our youth. And that was written by Kenneth Goff. The book is called Red Shadows, page 61, 69, and 71. Let's see here. So Kenneth Goff, he actually understands these things because he was the leader of the Communist Party in the United States of America before he realized the error of his ways. Anyway, communist members are now being used as speakers in colleges throughout the country. Quote, one of the primary recruiting targets of the Communist Party USA is the youth of America. The party has continued its intensified program aimed at and directed at the youth, page 67. The intensity of this program is revealed in the statement made by Gus Hall in March 1963 when he spoke of the party's success in placing its speakers in various college campuses throughout the country. The youth program of the party, he said, is so important that he or any other national leader would go anywhere to meet with young students. Hall concluded that the future depends on the youth. This committee of the Communist Party agreed that the appeal to young people should emphasize three current items: peace, civil rights, and employment for youth. And that was J. Edgar Hoover, FBI, 1965, Appropriations, page 39. Hold on here. Oh, I need a drink. I'm still kind of tired from working last night. So I did wake up. The sun did wake me up eventually coming in through the light, the bathroom in my bedroom. So not so bad off, but it's kind of cool. Like, I'm a semi-truck driver, and I always I compare myself to a train. Okay, so a train starts out really slow in the morning and then gets faster and faster and faster, and there's a point when you just can't stop the train, not easily at least. And I'm kind of the same way. Like, I'm tired in the morning, but at least I'm not falling asleep, right? And so I will do this, and then I will go drive a truck, and I will get to the point where I feel like I can drive all night long. And luckily, they put a 14-hour cap on our day, so I have to stop the truck, or I probably would drive like a madman all throughout the night and the day, because I used to drive 36-hour shifts when I worked in the oil fields. So that was back when I was in my my late 20s. But I'm 43 now, so maybe I can't do it quite as much as I used to. But anyway, sorry about that. All right. There has been a considerable amount of activity, especially in and around the colleges. In the first place, in relation to the citizens and radical discrimination, as well as for peace, abolish of the House Committee of Un-American Activities and other issues, there is a mushrooming of Marxist and socialist-oriented groups on the campuses in all parts of the country. We have witnessed the emergence of the new and very successful youth paper, The New Horizons for Youth. That was Communist Appeal to the Youth, Internal Security Subcommittee of the United States Senate, April 25th, 1961. And like, did they fail? Yeah, they failed. They should have been preaching from the pulpits. they should have required the students to come to talks about what's going on, and they should have banned these clubs, and the students who are in these clubs from being on the campuses. And if they were found out, they should have been given expulsion from the school. But they didn't do all of that, and now you're seeing the rippling effects of this trickle-down poison in our society, which is going to be the death and the destruction of our society as a whole, which is prophesied to happen, by the way. The tactics of the communist youth activities are to disrupt and distract from the anti-communist movements. Such an effort was accomplished at the hearing of the House Committee on Un-American Activities at San Francisco. Now, I'm going to read this, but I just want to say something real quick. The reason why they allowed the Soviet Union to fall and they took off their military uniforms and they put on their business suits is because they didn't want you to think that they were a threat, because they had enough poison in this country where in the long term it would destroy this country. They never fell. The Soviet Union is still alive and well. They take off their uniforms and they put on suits and you think they're gone. It's the same thugs that were in the KGB are the ones running the Soviet Union or Russia now. And I think it's funny that the left freaks out about Russia, but they're the communists in the country. They really are the socialist communists that want to destroy and fundamentally change this nation. The leaders, at least, they do. Anyway, and we've talked about how it is immoral to legislate thievery because for a good cause. You know, steal from your paycheck and your taxes for a good cause. It's always for a good cause. Save the children. And what they're doing is brainwashing the children. So in May 13th of 1960, a larger mob gathered when the hearing room was filled. A police officer acting as a guard closed the door and announced that no one else could be admitted. We're on page 68 if you're reading along. The mob in the corridor rushed him. Someone seized the officer's nightstick and beat him on the head with it. Police unrolled fire hoses and turned streams of water on the mob. This moved rioters back from the hearing room, but did not disperse them. When police moved into the mob to remove the leaders, a wild fight ensued. About 400 policemen and 350 rioters were involved. 12 persons were injured, 6 policemen, 2 firemen, 4 rioters. 64 rioters were arrested, 3 being juveniles who were not charged. The other 61 were released on bail after being charged with inciting a riot, disturbing the peace, and resisting arrest. On Saturday, May 14th, a crowd of some 3,000 milled around City Hall, 5 of them picketing with signs against the House Committee. A U.S. Representative, Gordon Shearer of Ohio, was present in San Francisco as a member of the HCUA subcommittee. In a speech to the House, he gave proof that the communists planned the San Francisco riots in advance and were on the scene as leaders. In the hearing room and the mobs outside directed the student rioters. Ugh, I'm having a hard time with I have blurry vision for some reason. I'm not sure why. But like in the rioting that's going on in the cities today, somebody just dropped a load of firewood in the middle of the street. Did they run out of bricks to throw? Because that's what's going on. Like some organization is putting pallets of bricks in these riot areas, and they're not for construction. They're to throw at cops and destroy property. That's all it's for. You're seeing all this stuff on the news. This is all planned. The whole thing has been planned. The plandemic. This is all part of that. and it's to overthrow your country. It really is. They released this coronavirus, which is not as deadly as they wanted to hype it up to be, from a level 4 biolab in Wuhan, China. The patent for this virus that they're saying is the novel, which means new, never been seen before, COVID-19, because it was discovered newly in the year 2019, was patented in 2017. Check out Royston Potter's videos. He was a high-level agent in the government, and he telling it like it is. And people are sending him things, documents and reports, and he's showing the people. So you should go look at his channel. Very educational. Okay. My puppies are over here underneath the table. All right. A group of local clergymen who attended the hearing as observers issued the following statement, which they gave as testimony of what took place. On page 69, I think I just skipped some stuff, but I don't care because my eyes are blurry. More than a dozen ministers were in attendance at the congressional hearings of the House Un-American Activities Committee in San Francisco on May 12th and 13th. What we witnessed was utterly fantastic. The shameful demonstrations against law and order and against this duly constituted committee of Congress defies description. It is our certain conviction that this indefensible demonstration against law and order was conceived, planned, and directed by a few hardcore communist agitators. Leaders of the mob, including faculty members and well-known leftist lawyer for the Fifth Amendment communists. We were sitting where we were able to observe the giving of instructions by the riot leaders who had gained access to the room. The Daily Californian, which was distributed widely at the scene, gave explicit instructions on how to harass the committee. They were told to laugh out loud, to make the congressman look ridiculous. They're still doing this. This hasn't changed. The war tactics are the same. These well-disciplined mobsters laughed at the dotted line that obeyed their masters to the last jeer. We watched a national committee man for the party line up a dozen communists near the railing and throw invective, abusive language, vile profanity, and fiendish charge at the congressman. The students, comprising of the rear third of the audience, stood up on their seats and yelled, jeered, hissed, and scoffed at the congressman. It was almost a complete breakdown of law and order. The only criticism we have of the police authorities were of allowing this element to make such a mockery out of law and order and gelling everyone of the leaders. I'm sorry, we have 7 pages left. We're on page 70. If anybody's watching, can you just say hi and tell me where you're from? Because I know that we have people who are watching, but I don't think it's that many. And you know what? I understand this stuff about the Communist Party is really boring, and I don't want to read it. But I think it's important for us to understand that what's going on today has been going on for a long time. So this thing has been building up for a long time, and they're using the same tactics 60 years ago that they're using today. And you're seeing, because there are more who are falling for this socialist crap, that they're gaining more power and able to do more damage to the country, which is exactly what the Soviet Union wanted to begin with. So the student demonstrations are smokescreens to cover up information that might become detrimental to the Communist Party. The news media will often report the demonstrations but give little notice to the information of the committee. Quote, maybe I take these glasses off, I'll do better. I'm nearsighted, so I use the glasses to drive. But my eyes are only 20/40, so like I don't think I need to use glasses to drive, but they told me I have to. So I have several times seen one or more of the media come to the question, is the Students for the Democratic Society a communist outfit? In the big national media, the answer is always an evasion of the question. The usual conclusion is that some communists have naturally been attracted to it, but the SDS is essentially made up of idealistic students who are disturbed by this or that, and that the SDS handout but better information is available for free. The literature and recruiting materials of the SDS, Students for Democratic Society, pose few problems for intelligent analysts. Much of its efforts in recent years has been drawn a bead on trying to wreck our industrial and research programs that have given us such an advantage in guerrilla warfare in Vietnam. Students for Democratic Society. The SDS uses the language of Mao Zedong, who killed millions and millions and millions and millions and hundreds of millions of people in his country. He uses the language of Mao Zedong in pretending that the real reason for these programs is our desire to burn and bomb innocent people. The tactics of the SDS are spelled out in Mao's writings. If our youth could get more of the truth about such organizations, the more intelligent appraisal of the idealistic propaganda that recruits them, who knows how many that might that join might have the sense to stay out. But when the media make out the SDS, SDS is mainly idealistic, they are virtually recruiting truly idealistic youth to join. Documents and testimony on such organizations are right at hand. Senate and House committees compile the need for information, little of which ever reaches a large public. When congressional hearings, go into communist activities, the communists usually send people to disrupt the meetings, page 71, or the witness from the communist side will stage a show and make speeches until they are thrown out. As a rule, the press then headline the antics and disturbances and has little space left to report what the committee learned in any more than a fragmentary and disconnected way. In short, the communists drag a red herring over the trail of information, and my colleagues of the big press go after the herring like a hungry cat. News is violence, disturbance of peace, defiance of authority, and the theatrical information is dull by comparison. American Legion, page 52, March 1970. Known communists and their fellow travelers are often given prominent speaking opportunities. There are sometimes innocently done and other times with utmost shrewdness. Recently, Jerry Rubin spoke at the University of Utah. His speech has caused considerable disturbance to some, while to others, he was applauded and supported. Similar speeches and the same type of characters are to be found on nearly every camp across the nation. With their beards, robes, and clowning antics, they entertain and amuse, but they are promoting one objective, a breakdown of respect for law, order, and morals. The tragedy of these foul-mouthed, treasonous antics within our universities is that they are gaining influence and popularity. Our youth are being lulled by the lullaby tune of the International Revolutionary Minstrels. Page 73. So page 72 was an article, like a picture of our article. I'm not reading it. I just want to get through this, but we're on page 73, and we're going to read 73, 74, 75, 76, and 77, so five pages. Parts of Rubin's speech are as follows. All of you got to do to be a judge is go to a costume store. It costs $25 a day to rent these black robes, and you become a judge. And for 5 months, eight of us had sat in a courtroom on the 23rd floor in Chicago court building and had our lives in the hands of a Julius. You've got to dig Julius Hoffman. On Thursday, Dave Dellinger was sitting and listening to a witness testify when the witness, who was the assistant police chief, lied. David shouted out, "Bullshit," with laughter, and it's marked out, but I don't care. I'm saying it because whatever. The judge Hoffman said, "Take that man into custody." Laughter. And that night, David was jailed. He was put into jail without bail because he shouted out the word bullshit, which is probably the most common word in the English language. If I write a book about the trial, it's going to be the title of that book, Bullshit. Anyways, I just wanted to tell you what I think of these robes. Here's what I think of the courts and the jails and Julius Hoffman and all of the judges that put black robes that put black people in jail, that put yippies in jail. Yippies. The heck's a yippie? A hippie? Whatever. That put long hairs in jail. Guess I'd be in jail because I've got long hair. There are over 300,000 people in jail right now for smoking flowers. The people who put them in jail are the people who wear black robes and think that makes them superhuman gods or something, and they can decide that another man can spend his life in jail. Well, I make a proposal. All the judges ought to go to jail. This is a speech at the University of Utah. I'll tell you what my intent was on crossing the state line of Utah. I just said at a press conference that the Yippies are moving their national office to Salt Lake City, Utah. You're going to get dope, sex, and riots. Eldridge Cleaver is now living in Salt Lake City, and just let the Salt Lake City police come and find him. The Black Panthers are also moving their offices to Salt Lake City, and they're going to integrate the Mormon Church. I know I shouldn't say certain things, so I'm not going to say them, but I would have loved to join their organizations and befriend them all and betray them all, and I'm just going to leave it at that. And more patriots probably should be doing stuff like that, but I can't. I don't have a poker face. If I was in that crowd, I would have secretly made my way up to the back of the stage somehow, and I would have attacked that man. Because these are the subversives in our country that are destroying our nation. And they're doing it by by a thousand cuts. And nobody does anything about it. Because of freedom of speech. They use our liberties against us to destroy us. What are we going to do about it? Our crime is obscenity. That's basically the crime, saying dirty words like F or BS. I mean, every kid's goal should be to grow up and become a criminal. Inciting to riot, that's my occupation. Child molesting, that's what we're on trial for. Whatever technology the pigs have, it is impossible because the Panthers are right. But Jesus is also a nigger. Sorry, I'm just reading this for what it says. Jesus was also black. He was a black nigger. And that is the message we have got to take to every church that says that black people aren't equal. Christianity bought racism to the soul. And you got to begin with the church, and you're going to say to the church that you are a pagan. You go to hell because it's religion. It's how you live your life. And if you decide that people aren't equal, you're irreligious, that's this BS. What's this BS religion about religion? The enemy is in the White House. The enemy is in the churches. We are joining the black N-words, and the N-words are going to take over America, and the country belongs to the N-words. Okay. I can't read any more of this crap. Let me see here. I'm just trying to figure out when... This was February 9th, 1970. I got to finish. I'm going to finish. All right, let's see here. Well, it is a crazy law, and it is an insane judge, but Spiro Agnew is insane too. Spiro Agnew is Vice President of the United States. And Richard Nixon is insane, too. He is the president of the United States. If we all become criminals, then what are they going to do with us? There will be so many of us, the law will become obsolete and will take over. That's the whole purpose. The whole purpose of that is when that happens, that patriots need to rise up and kill them and stop them from doing what they're doing. If the government can't deal with it, then the military needs to deal with it, and the patriots and the militias of this country need to deal with it. And every man over the age of 18 with a rifle is part of the militia, and I don't care how, or that's kind of what was laid out in the Constitution. So we're on page 75. And we only have really one page, and then there's like some photocopies of some things, and I'm not going to read it because I'm done with this chapter. And then when we come back on tomorrow, I'll read Riots and Revolution. We're accused of conspiracy. Dig it? Conspiracy. This is conspiracy. Conspiracies are beautiful. What does conspiracy mean? It means breathing. We breathe together. That's what a conspiracy is. We're guilty of a conspiracy. We're guilty of conspiring to overthrow America. A real conspiracy. The court system is as corrupt as the political system, which is as corrupt as the economic system, which is as the military. The only people I have faith in are the people of this room, but it is only the people of this room that can free us and free everyone else in jail. Okay, criminals are in jail because they deserve to be in jail. Criminals do things to destroy and hurt other people, whether that's financially, mentally, spiritually, or morally. they're harm to society. That's why they're in prison. Okay. And don't tell me the drug. I'll leave it alone. The only people I have faith in are the people of this room. Let's see here. It's not going to be any judge, menopausal judge, who gets his money from the citizens that is going to free us. It's going to be the young kids of America. The yuppies are all over the suburbs. The yuppies are everywhere. The revolution is the living room. And just think, this guy who was probably in his 30s back then, let me think, he would be in his 80s now. And the people that he was brainwashing who were in their 20s, they'd be in their 70s now, I guess. Or maybe not 70s. Okay, so 1970, I was born in 77, so 50 years ago. This was 50 years ago. So, yeah, they'd be in their 70s now because they were 20 back then. I'll tell you when the real trial is over. I want to be able to turn on the television and see Walter Cronkite, bring down a map, and I want to see that University of Utah is on fire. What the revolution is about is our own lives, and we're going to fight where we are, wherever we are, and no threats are going to intimidate us. If I'm put in jail next week for 10 years, I know damn well that the people of this room are going to break down the bars and free me. Thank you. All right, so that's the end of that quote, which was given back in February of 1970. Let's see here. Jerry Rubin represented a gang. His partners eagerly planned his trips and speeches. They are in the audience to cheer and applaud certain words and sentences. With mass psychology, the audiences are played into the emotional twist of agreement with him and his views, whereas they never would have done so as individuals. This is an old tactic to reduce the principles and standards of a group or a nation. Now is a time for men of honor to take the initiative to thwart the purposes of such traitors to our country and our integrity. Representative Leon H. Savage was one voice, at least, that gave protest to such demonstration. He deserves a pat on the back for the classic letter, which should express the attitude and standards of every man in office and public trust. And his letter is what's next, and I can't even hardly read it. It's so small. I'm going to try. Now, these letters are smaller than the head of my pen. I could take one pen and cross through and not even see the letters. That's how small the letters are, but let's see if I can read it. Okay, this was written to Commissioner G. Homer Durham, State Board of Higher Education, University Club Building, Salt Lake City, Utah. Dear Commissioner Durham, I am very alarmed about the apathy I find among administrators at the University of Utah concerning the recent talk given by Jerry Rubin. I am very proud of the history of our university, but I feel that bringing to our state such intellectual and spiritual garbage on Rubin represents does our community and state a great disservice. He advocates burning the universities and overthrowing our government. He discusses religious institution and leaders in the most obscene language. My concern has led to investigation of the reasons he came here. the individuals responsible and what can be done to prevent public faculties from being used to advocate destruction, revolution, and treason in the future. On February 3, 1970, the Student Affairs Committee of the University of Utah held a meeting to approve Jerry Rubin's coming here to speak. A quorum was not present, so a poll of absent members was taken over the telephone. 5 days later, Jerry Rubin was in Salt Lake City. The committee is supposed to be a deliberative body, and I can't help wondering what kind of education and government processes these students must have had, and how well the state legislature would fill its functions if operated in this way. The sponsoring organization for Rubin's talk was reported to be the Vandals, an organization which is apparently the offspring of, if not the same organization as the SDS. The Vandals' constitution indicates that they are concerned with air and water pollution. Its practices seem to mean pollute the air with foul language and pollute the water with LSD. And that was February 26, 1970. And then there's one more here. Now, the guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. I'm going to finish reading this one last letter, and then we are going to open the phone lines. If there's nobody there, which is what it is most of the time, and I don't blame people for not wanting to listen into this, is boring to me. But I'm going to read it. So anyway, the guest call-in line about this topic or any other religious topic, you can call me. We're live right now. Well, it's a little afternoon on September 11th, 2020, 19 years after the World Trade Center. So I'm going to read this letter, and then anybody who wants to call can call 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. The university president has shown no concern about Rubin's appearance here. The governor has said nothing. The governor had been informed at his prayer breakfast by the governor of Wyoming of what Rubin had said in Laramie 3 weeks previously. He apparently was unconcerned. Neil Maxwell, vice president, seemed not to be concerned when, 3 days before Rubin spoke here, I spoke with him and expressed my disapproval of university facilities being used to tear down what the owners of those facilities, the taxpayers, are trying to build. I would hope that the Higher Education Commission will prevent revolutionaries from using public facilities in Utah to spout their hatred and treason hereafter. In my position of the Higher Education Committee of the legislature, I will continue to search for educators and administrators who do not vigorously uphold the constitutions of our state and nation, and who do not vigorously oppose such events as Jerry Rubin's Roman Circus. I will continue to expose such individuals and seek to replace them with men of honor and integrity. Sincerely, Leon H. Savage, representative of the state of Utah. Okay, so that's the end of that. I'm just going to say it one more time. Guest calling number is 917-889-8827. With taking your questions about religion and theology. For your comments, let me just start with a quick preview of the next chapter. It's chapter 6, Riots and Revolution, and that's page 78 of The Coming American Revolution. And let me just read this real quick. It's a quick quote, and then I don't see anybody calling in, so we're going to be done. which is kind of funny because this is a 30 page and I ran through it in an hour and 15 minutes, which is great because I need to get to work. Your republic will be fearfully plundered and laid waste by barbarians in the 20th century as the Roman Empire was in the 5th century, with this difference, that the Huns and the Vandals will have been engendered within your own country by your own institutions. British historian Lord Macaulay, and I could say more. I can always say more, but I'm not going to, because if I get to work now, I'll leave the yard at 1, and I will drive until between 1 to 3 in the morning, so I need to get going. And then I'll be home between 3 and 4 in the morning, probably, be to sleep by 4. And then I'll sleep till noon, and then I will get up and probably do a radio program around 1 o'clock tomorrow. But we'll see. All right, well, I got to get going. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to make it through me with this chapter, with me through this chapter, whatever. And don't forget that you can find many more books at OgdenCrowd.com to read about theology, especially the Restoration Theology of Mormonism. And you can find more of my audio radio programs at iTunes by searching Fundamentally Mormon. So thank you for listening, everyone. Take care. God bless. And goodbye.